All right, it's Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. Art of Departure 4.
Tell us what we're doing here, Lynn. I have no idea. I just said you said you were having a party. I wanted to
Thank you. Yeah, well, I've been wanting to have a bit of a discussion group for the podcast and recording for some time about death before, during, and after. And Bobby can talk a bit more about the after here when we get to her. I just wanted to start this, and so it came together earlier this year, and I called it the Art of Departure, and it was a one-off. It went amazingly. There was just so much shared, and so many people really grateful to have this opportunity to just talk about different aspects of death that they might have thought about before, but didn't really have too many people to talk about it with, or, not everybody is comfortable. It's easier just to sort of get on to the next thing in life. We've got Annie. We're welcoming Christina, and I've got the death deck.
Oh, I have that deck too.
Oh, do you?
So good. Well, because I heard about it here and I ordered it and it's wonderful.
We have any quiet moments, or even just intentionally, we could draw cards at random and see what
Good idea.
conversation starter or continuer.
Okay.
We're welcoming Rudy.
Oh, Rudy.
Rudy, our favorite songwriter.
Hi, Lynn. Good evening.
All right, everybody's showing up. Showing up. Woo!
Poco a poco, little by little.
Right, hi, Bobby.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Tony.
Hi. Good to see you.
Good to see you. It's been a little while.
I know.
Back with the gang, plus more. Now,
Yeah.
and Daniel signed up, but he's not here. But hey, I did tell people they could show up whenever. So, oh, Daniel, woohoo!
Lynn.
All right, Daniel and Rudy.
Rudy's here.
Daniel,
Wow,
the boys are back
Rudy.
in town. The boys are back in town. Okay, sorry.
Yay.
Glad to see my buddy.
Oh, Jessica. All right.
Rudy, your song was so wonderful at
Oh.
the very last session of Unmute.
Thank you. Thanks for kind words. It was, as Lynn knows, it's an interesting part of my story, and thanks for hearing it.
Yeah, we were just acknowledging your great insight into your creativity, and just accepting that
Accepting that I'm right back where I started
you remember you started.
from.
Daniel, Rudy, Annie, and I, and Christina, for sometimes are part of this Unmute Yourself, Your Story Matters writing with Anne Randolph. So that's what we're talking about. We just finished a session on Monday. So, hey, you know what? Maybe we could just do a quick hello and introduce ourselves because Rudy has not been here before and Jessica hasn't been either. I could start. Just a few minutes, whatever you want to say. 3 years ago, I decided to set up a memorial for myself, and I set up a bench in the cemetery, which some of you know, where my grandparents and little brother are buried. And I visit there quite often. I'm probably going tomorrow. I photographed it in all its seasons, write about it a lot, think about it. It's an interesting thing to do because mostly people will set up a memorial bench after someone dies to sort of reach out to them. And this is my way to sort of reach back to people. So anyway, back to the Art of Departure, we did a two, we did a three, and then the summer went by, and today is my mom's birthday. She was born 96 years ago, and I just felt to gather people again together. Yeah, and we talk about a lot of different things here. It's just really whatever you want to talk about on the topic. And I got the death deck. One of the women who created that was on the Art of Departure 3. And so I thought, if we have a lull in the conversation, we can pick some cards at random. And there's a lot of multiple choice, which is always fun. Annie, you're next to me on the screen. Do you want to go next?
Oh, sure. Hi, I'm Annie, and I think Lynn is wonderful. So whatever she does, I want to be a part of. I'm also interested in death. When my father died 10 years ago, we, the seven siblings, had said not to move his body. We wanted to all get home and be with him. And I didn't realize how important that would be. And I had to get from Cortez Island to Toronto, and it took me the longest of anyone. And when I got there, the room was cool. My father was in bed, and I had an opportunity to be with him. And it was one of the most valuable experiences that I've ever had. And so I'm more than interested in talking about death and what happens and how to make it meaningful. So I'm grateful you're doing this, Lynn.
Thank you, Annie. It's wonderful to have you here. Certainly share more as you're inspired through this time. And just to mention, anyone is free to stay as long or as short as you wish, or even if you need to leave and then you think, you know what, I want to go back, you can do that too. Daniel, what's up with you?
I'm going to Durango Friday. So that's what's up. I don't know, I'm here. I'm happy to be here. Life is good. I mean, it just goes by quickly. And I just printed a poem that my friend's wife sent me, my friend Jose, who died recently, a couple months ago. And so I'll share that later.
Okay.
Called Don't Cry If You Love Me. So yeah, I'll share that. Life is good. Yeah, I'm in a quiet and deep place.
Awesome. Well, I'm so glad you joined us, Daniel. It's always a pleasure to be in your presence. Tony.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tony Gittles. I come to you from Orlando, Florida. And I spent most of this year working with Lynn. She was the editor. Yeah, look at this, released 2 weeks ago, 21 mistakes caregivers make and how to avoid them. And I just checked my email. There are 398 emails from you, Lynn, back and forth to figure out what to do with. Yeah, so we had an amazing year and Lynn helped me make this a really beautiful book. And I'm so pleased with her. So I work with family caregivers. You know, as far as death, the only person I ever was kind of with at near death was my mother. And I took care of her for 14 years. She was in an assisted living facility. And I did spend most of the day with her the last day she was alive. I didn't know she was going to die that evening. She just kept rebounding. She was on her way to her 100th birthday. Almost made it. With her and with the rabbi that came in, the chaplain that came in to visit her from hospice, I got to really visit the conversation about death and kind of review what I had learned or read about over the years. So it wasn't terribly real. My dad had died in 1989, and he was in a different state when that happened. And I don't know, it was sudden. And so there wasn't a journey with that and a lot of reflection. But in working with family caregivers, I'm working with a lot of families that have a loved one with dementia. And over the past 5 years, a number of their spouses or family members have passed away. And, you know, I'm just observing all the grief that they're going through while the person is alive, as well as when they die. And there certainly is a lot of suffering. And I think that is part of our culture, that we don't address death. You know, we don't talk about it. We don't address it. I started inquiring carefully, you know, what people think about it, what they expect to feel when it happens, what they're feeling while they're going through this stage called anticipatory grief. I'm pretty shocked that people suffer for a very long time about this, whereas my point of view doesn't allow for that kind of emotional and long-term grieving. So I have a different belief system about that. So anyway, so what an interesting conversation this is going to be, Lynn.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being in the conversation, Tony. Lots of good stuff you just said there. Bobby.
Hello. Okay. Hi, I'm Bobby. I am a medium. I've said right there, born medium. I was born this way. I have with death my entire life because they talk in my head unsolicited and solicited, actually, because now I solicit them. Anywho, the subject and the subject matter personally and professionally are two separate sort of things, but the same. I find it interesting, Tony, that you, because I think we've been on each one of these together. I used to say exactly what you said, that I have a different outlook on death and it affects me differently. But then I had someone really close to me pass away a year ago. And the anticipation of death, I actually did a video because I've got a YouTube channel, The Anticipation of Grief. I thought oh, geez, I thought I thought of something new when I made that video. But I understand what you mean in that, the waiting for someone to pass, you don't know where you're supposed to be with waiting for someone to pass. Am I supposed to start crying about it now? Or am I supposed to actually keep rallying forth and saying, oh, they get to stay, this is wonderful. What do you do with that? It's an excellent position people, it's not an excellent position, it's a horrible position people find themselves in. But daily in my job, I help people deal with their grief. And I speak to people who are on the other side. And I got to tell you, the people on the other side are the happiest people I meet, I get to spend time with. And they often describe it to me as when we mourn someone really, really hard, it's like being at a party and having your friends and family text you constantly while you're at the party saying, I can't believe you're at a party. I miss you. Stop having fun at the party. Please come home. Blah, blah, blah. You can't have fun at the party. You can't move forward when your family is pulling you too hard. So yeah, personally, I'm one way. Professionally, I'm quite another. And yeah, they do mix and mold a little bit. It's kind of funny how that is. I thought I had a different outlook, but I'm finding that I don't, but I do, if that makes sense.
Well,
I think it's Jessica. I love your shirt.
Thank you. I got it from a spiritual retreat as part of my grieving. Thank you.
Awesome. Because your mind tells you so many lies and your soul is always honest with you. Yeah.
Thank you, Bobby.
Lose your mind, find your soul, listen to your body, Kate.
All right. Well, that's a good segue. Go ahead, Jessica. It's first time for you here.
Yes, I absolutely love this topic because people don't like to talk about death and dying. And once you experience that, then you're actually interested and want to. So I'm dialing in from Austin, Texas. I have lost both of my parents. My mother passed this last April. And it wasn't the death that I was expecting because she was living with mixed dementia. And so it was different from what I experienced with my father's death. But I am grateful that I got to be there for both of them till they took their very last breath. After I experienced my dad's death, it took away the fear of death. And I saw it as something beautiful, letting go of this side of the fence and going and being able to see the light quite literally go up and out of him. And I expected the same with my mother, and it wasn't the same. In fact, it was very traumatic. So I found myself comparing. My dad passed with the crescent moon. My mom passed with a sunny morning, and the different feelings, but then the realization of they're both gone, but not gone entirely. So I still am very much so connected to my father. He still channels through me when especially when I'm cooking in the kitchen. My mother, not so much. I get a few thoughts here and there from her, but I welcome them instead of freaking out like I used to, like, what's happening? So I'm excited about the topic, and I can share more later.
Yes.
Yes,
you will. I know something that I hope you will share. Thank you so much, Jessica, for being here. I'm really glad you were able to join us. How about Rudy next, and then we'll wrap with Christina on this intro.
I'm joining you from sunny San Antonio, Texas. I'm a fan of Lynn's, and she's invited me a couple different things over the last year and a half or so that I've known her, and this is the first one I've been able to attend. I had very particular experiences with the deaths of both of my parents that I now realize, speaking to you, and just in this moment, I realize I've never written about either one of those two, and they're very pivotal moments in my life. Both of their deaths were very pivotal moments in my life. And so that may be the whole reason I came, just to say out loud to my writing coach, hey, yeah, I think I'm going to write about my parents' death. I'm a writer, a musician, and a spiritual director, and I've sung at and conducted a couple hundred funerals, memorial services, seemed more and more all the time now that I'm in my 70s. And I've had a number of feelings on the subject and look forward to hearing your thoughts and feelings and to sharing mine. With that, I'm done.
Thank you so much, Rudy. Thank you for joining us. And Christina.
Hello. I come to you from the Sunshine Coast, Roberts Creek in beautiful British Columbia.
Yeah.
Lovely. We've had such a great extended summer. So I'm in the midst of a move and I love Lynn. So I've been, I think, on all of them. I might have missed the last one or missed the last whatever you had.
Me too.
And but otherwise, I try and catch it all. Death. Okay. So I've gone through a lot of it in my life and I don't get too phased by it any. I don't know that I ever did. I don't feel separated from the dead. I had a finance teacher once in university ask the weirdest question, nothing to do with finance. Maybe it did. He says, how do we know that we're alive and the dead are dead? I thought, oh, you're right. And it became an hour-long conversation of us kids discussing the concept. Like, oh, maybe that's the reality. This is just an illusion and there's another whole reality that on the other side. I'm sure there's a few on this call who might agree. All right. Yeah, that one. I lost my, well, it's not lost, but my father passed at 100 in December and only the good die young. Oh, no, no loss to me and no loss to any of us. He left his millions to charity. I've struggled my entire life without family assistance. So it's not that it's not about money. It's just that there wasn't a support system in my life from my family. So I didn't really miss, I don't miss them when they're gone. As in, there wasn't a relationship. So I don't, the same as whether they're here or not. And I also find that so many people that died, wasn't seeing much of them anyways. It's just all of a sudden I can't phone them. I can't see them. I can't have this more intimate connection with them. Or maybe it is an intimate connection and it's the less intimate is actually when we're in the body. Because I feel that when we do lose someone, they're suddenly on our conscious, they're more in our heart than they may have been before, because there's an awareness or another level of conscious awareness that might not have been there. Or now my mother has been on the other side. She died on my 18th birthday and of hepatitis, of a vaccine injury, actually. So of course I don't believe in any of that crap, but I almost died of a vaccine injury. So that put me on a path of studying the body and the human spirit and the human psyche. So that's been my entire life, because I think when something impacts you, well, as it did me on my 18th birthday, every birthday is just like a bit of a happy sort of, it never goes away. I thought it would go away. It never goes away. Every birthday is this connection with my adopted mother. And she was my teacher on this planet. So and now it's I connect with my ex-husband who just passed a couple of years ago. And as the executor, I finished all my duties last year. And I check in with him every once in a while. And we have a great conversation. So probably better than we did, because then he could hang up on me. Now he doesn't. So I got this direct line, the direct 1-800 number to whoever I need to talk to. Yeah, so that's me. Look forward to the conversation. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Christina. My goodness. Yeah, you reminded me that on Mother's Day was always awkward when we were growing up. And I gradually figured out that it was because we should honor our mothers every day, not a special day. And what had happened was her mother's mother had died on Mother's Day. So, you know, there was this association all the time. It was like not a happy time for her growing up. So oh my goodness. Whoa, we have such a wealth of wisdom here on this call. I'm so excited to be here. I want to hear so much from everybody, but let's just start with a little multiple choice here, okay? Whatever anybody wants to say. So timing-wise, what would be the best way to die? So A, B, or C. A is instantly without warning or pain. B, within 3 months of a diagnosis, uncomfortable but able to do a few last things. Or C, after a year of terminal illness, in pain, but time for my family and me to prepare.
A, first one. That's my poor choice. Yeah, just like that.
A,
yeah.
Is it be A because you should be preparing the whole time anyways?
Well, that's a great question.
I start most mornings, almost every morning, I go outside and greet the sunrise. And I do a particular ritualistic meditation of facing the four directions, the five directions. Mm-hmm. The west is the direction of letting go into death. And I try, insofar as possible, to spend you know, half a minute, feeling like this is the moment I'm dying. This is it. When I die, I want to feel like this, that I can let go like this. Now, that make-believe, am I pretending? I don't know. Or am I actually building a neural pathway to the moment of my death? I don't know. But so I would hope that it would happen instantly. And as I go, I remember, oh, yeah, this is letting go. And 4 years ago, I had a car wreck and a near-death experience. And as I was flipping over and over at 80 miles an hour, rolling over, I thought, oh, this is how it ends. And I let go at such a profoundly peaceful level that it was like, yeah. So anyway, that's the answer to the question. Yeah, that's why A is without hesitation for me. And I'd like to think I could do B or C just equally with equanimity, but who knows?
Crapshoot, right?
I'm going to roll the dice. Okay, A, come on, come on, A. Here we go, A.
I would have to say C.
Who said C?
Jessica. Yeah. I realize now that with my parents passing, their prolonged passing was maybe not so much for them, but it was for me in letting go. And I think even if I have everything planned out as far as and to the nth degree, everything, I would still want to have the time to allow them to come to terms, because I feel like the last and sometimes the worst thing is for someone to abruptly pass and the people left behind are hurting and lost, and the grieving process is natural and normal, but it's more in depth and it's hard to come to terms with it. So I'd be like Bobby said earlier, I'd be texting, I miss you, I miss you, I miss you. if it was possible, but having that time so that everybody is as much on the same page as possible.
Yeah.
So then you have that time to let it be a celebratory process. Even if I had some sort of terminal illness, that towards the end, I would want to have that celebratory living memorial instead of making people smile and get through something like that after the fact.
Can I just say, as speaking for the dead, can I do that? I think I can. Jessica has a good point. You actually, when I talk to people about the way they died, they almost never remember or care. It's such a tiny, tiny, tiny part of your existence. It's everything else that actually leads up to that that you actually care about. It's only the survivors that care how you die. Even murder victims, they do not care about solving the murder. They're at the party. They don't care anymore. That's over. That's a you thing, not a them thing. You're right. It is for the survivors, and as far as I know.
Daniel.
It was funny when Rudy talked about the car, his car accident. I went to Anne's two-day retreat. Yeah, last year, because this year we went to the week retreat. So last year, it was the first retreat she did after COVID. And I was up there for 2 days. Michael and I went. We were on our way home Sunday evening. And, you know, I would just be like, wow. There was a lot going on for me because it was my first time with people again in a workshop. And so there was that. And then there was the workshop and the improvisation and all that stuff. And we're driving on the road from Santa Fe down to Albuquerque. And a car comes and is coming into my lane. And I went, oh. And I jammed on the brakes, and then I could feel the car. I thought we were going to flip. Took my feet off the brake, and I kind of went to the left. But, you know, everything goes into suspended animation. And I had the presence of mind. I said, not out loud, I said, oh, is this how it ends? And I was like, wow, is this how it ends? Because you don't know how you're going to die, when you're going to die, right? Now, if you have a terminal illness and you're dying, that's different, right? So, and my second thought was, oh, good, we're together, Michael and I. We died together. And I don't know why I'm telling you this. Oh, because you asked me about A, when you pick A. And I was like, wow, you know, and the awareness that the day's coming. You will die. You're going to die one day, you know, and you're closer to your death than you are to your birth. I'm 61, and I've thought about who's dying first, Michael or me. Yeah. Anyway, so that's been a big, for a couple years now, I've always been very selfish. I want to go first because I don't want to be left behind. I don't want to deal with the fucking grief. Not me. I don't want to feel the loneliness and pain and all that. Because I do think you die, you're done. It's not like you're mourning for how your body died, you know? So, yeah, that's my thing.
Well, thank you very much. Tony, what's up?
Yeah, this is Tony. And I just want to thank Bobby for that perspective on people that have passed. I love that. That is great. Such an interesting question, Lynn. I didn't realize it was going to bring up stuff. And, several years ago, I would have said, just let me die quickly. And now I've been in a relationship for the last 4.5 years. So there's another person involved. Mm-hmm. I am not close to any family. I have cousins. There are people, but they're not really part of my life. And I do have a rare disease, a progressive neurological disease, and my family doesn't call me. So I don't know how they'll feel when I die. Hopefully they're going to regret that they didn't get to know me better. That's what I wish on them. So the answer that I pick is C, because I have such purpose in my life right now that I could see myself continuing to work and write, making a difference for other people and being a role model of some kind. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm helping family caregivers now. And with the book, I have so much more opportunity to be on podcasts and in the media. And I've been writing articles for a magazine. So it's like really rewarding and it's fun. It's not like it's work. You know, I've been told it is my sole purpose to be here and to do this. So why not just keep doing it as long as I can, right? And, you know, I'm very functional right now. I don't have a year diagnosis or anything. It should be longer, but we'll see. But I enjoy the time with my partner, though we live in separate homes. He's very much of an advocate for caregivers and for people with dementia. His wife died of early onset dementia. So we do a lot of work in the community together, and it's fun. We just love making a difference for people and talking about what we're doing, because nobody's doing what we're doing in the community. So it gets a lot of attention. So it's a good life. Right now, these could be the best. I've had a good life. I had a good career. I enjoyed my mom and dad when they were here. They were very supportive. They took care of me. I took care of them. And, you know, now this is a different phase where I get to experience a loving relationship and a caring relationship that I had not had earlier in life. And just this big purpose that's so much bigger than just me. So give me a year. Give me that year.
Take a year. Take as much time as you want.
All right. Thank you.
It is lovely for sure to have a mission and a vision and a purpose. You know, I think that really helps us focus our life while we get to be here. And certainly I wake up every day just going, oh, thank you. I get another day, morning at least. But yeah, I'll just say that when I was on Kauai the last time, which is 5.5 years, almost 6 years ago now, I'd been there for almost 100 days when the false missile alert happened. You know, I was coming up to just a few days away from coming back to Canada without plans to go back after that was like the 10th visit. So it was a big deal that I was just about gone. That's where I met Anne with the Unmute writing. Just briefly, I'd gone for a walk in the morning after a day that was like, just an incredible day at the beach and with friends. And it just felt like it could have been a beautiful last day of life. And then in the morning, I was out for this early morning walk and these people go running by me and I say, oh, it looks like you're getting a good workout. They said, did you hear there's a missile coming? We're going for cover. And I'm going, what? Like, I mean, like Daniel, like you and Rudy, like this feeling of like, oh, I'm in this moment and I'm consciously about to die. Like, what? Like, I felt though that I was in somebody else's movie. Like, it felt surreal. And it didn't happen. At least I don't think it did. I don't think it happened. Although I have had a feeling since that day that I'm in a parallel life, because it just happened so fast that we thought we would just keep living. So there is that. There is that still. Anybody else want to share something?
I wanted to add, this is Tony, that I'm an only child and that I do not have any children. And that really I've lived my whole life for me. Hopefully not being judged as selfish, but, you know, I was independent, got to make my own decisions, move, change jobs when I wanted to. My parents were fine wherever I wanted to go. They released me to go live my life. I did work in our family business for a while, but, you know, it's a different life not having that family. I've had to create family and community wherever I've gone. And in a way, it's a positive because you get to pick your family, your community. And I have some very nice relatives that I would love to have more engagement with. And I attempt it, and then I don't hear from them anymore. And maybe that's enough. Maybe that's all we're designed to do this lifetime, that type of interaction. Perhaps there isn't a greater purpose that we've come into this life together at this particular time. So I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with reaching out to them when I do. I'm making an effort and I'm interested in their life and their families. And so I get little pieces of information over time. And of course, get to follow them on Facebook. So I get to see little kids grow up. And that's fine. And if I get to see them in person, I will plan that and I will go visit. And most of them are in the Chicago area. So, you know, it would involve planning and a trip and not going in the winter to see them.
Especially in Florida.
Yeah, they should come down. They should come to Disney World.
Yeah.
Well, there's a consideration. So Rudy may return. He's enjoying the conversation. He has to leave for a bit. Christina?
I haven't responded to that one, so I'll respond if that's okay.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so I go with B, the middle road, because you never know. We could find a cure for whatever I got within 3 months. There's always that possibility. And I think what wasn't in the question, of course, would be, would I want the same thing at 20 or would I, as I do in my 60s, like, would I have the same answer? Does it make a difference even? Less to plan when you're younger. So yeah, the 3 months, so that there is that time too, because I traditionally cram at the last minute. So that would be my 3 month cramming time. Right. But because he did say, like, I'm healthy enough to get a few things done. So that would be it would be like headquarters, and I'd have like a team, and I'd have everybody working at different things to get different things done. You know, I'd run it like a little mini corporation. We're having a, hey, you guys, there's like a finish line here. It's a project. It's a race to the finish line, right? So, you know, we want to get there and tickety-boo time with all everything done and everything in place and my bench bought and everything. Yeah, so my choice. You never know. I might live past it.
Well, thank you very much. Go ahead, Bobby.
Oh, okie dokie. I actually want to address two different things. Tony talked about family. And when I do readings, it is shown to me that family are people you wouldn't have sought out during your lifetime, but you needed to know, and therefore they made them related to you. So yeah, rest assured on that one. And then I have actually read people who know they're going to pass, who get the 3 months or get the year. And okie dokie, no matter what, if they are going to pass for certain, I am being told to tell them wonderful things are coming. They're going to go through an amazing transition. It's all good. I am like joy in my heart. Once I had to tell a man, I actually don't think you're going to pass. And I don't want to blow smoke up your fanny, but I'm pretty sure you're not going to pass. And he did not pass. He actually lived for 3 years. And then when I read him again, I said, oh, you're going to pass this time. And he said, yeah, I'm going to do it this time. I said, I'm pretty sure you are too. I said, and he actually passed that Tuesday. But it was the same sort of thing. It was joy. When he wasn't going to pass, it was not joy. So I just wanted to add that as a person who talks to people who are knowing they're going to go.
Go ahead, Daniel. Thank you, Bobby.
That was funny. That was very funny, Bobby. The what? It's I know you. It's people you wouldn't have chosen, but you needed to know. That's hysterical. And I also want to say, on the flip side of that, there are members of your family that can be the grace that get you through. Like my grandmother and my cousin, you know, got me through childhood. And let me say something else about that question. When you know, they're saying, okay, do I want a year? Do I want 3 years? Do I want this? And that's all fun. But you can't assume you're going to feel good. You can't assume you're going to be healthy. You can't assume that the person sitting here right now is who you're going to be till you die. You know, especially if you have cancer, or you could have a debilitating other kind of thing, or you are in an accident and you're paralyzed from the neck down. So you can't assume that it's all nice and well. But I think these questions are good. They're designed to at least get you to think about dying, right? So I just wanted to say that.
Thanks, Daniel. Annie, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. I'm still thinking of which one I would go with.
Timing-wise, what would be the best way to die? So A, B, or C. A is instantly without warning or pain. B, within 3 months of a diagnosis, uncomfortable but able to do a few last things. Or C, after a year of terminal illness, in pain but time for my family and me to prepare.
I see that there are positives in each of them. I'm glad I don't actually really get to decide. It's not up to me. But it's an interesting thing to think about. I'll pass.
Okay, thank you. How about a shrine shine? Name and explain one personal item that rightfully belongs in your post-mortem shrine.
Oh.
Read it again.
The shrine shine. Shrine shine. Ah, so hard to say that. Name and explain one personal item that rightfully belongs in your post-mortem shrine. So I guess that would be a shrine that someone else would put together for you after you've died that you would choose to have there. Jessica?
I would have them put my book in there because it was, I actually shared parts of my mother and father and my father's passing, but it was a very cathartic process that I hope eventually, and I do believe eventually will be what I'm most known for as being that the proactive caregiver. So I would expect that to be something that they would put in there as something positive and impactful, the legacy left behind type of thing.
Yeah, that's great. The legacy piece for sure. Thanks, Jessica. Yes, the proactive caregiver. And Bobby?
Jessica stole my answer. because I see my kids, because I have 3 children of my own, and I can see them putting my book in there because my book is meant to explain minds like this. And I believe I'm on this planet to help explain certain things that might be considered mental illnesses rather than gifts. Because they said I was a schizophrenic, and I am not. That's it. Actually, my first thing that came to my mind was my underwear. I don't know why I whispered it.
All of your underwear?
That's funny.
All right. Anybody else at the moment? Or anything else? We don't need to keep going with cards if there's something else that somebody wants to share.
I can share the experience if you want.
Sure. Yes. Go ahead, Jessica. Please do.
So the idea of death and dying at this point in time in my life was the furthest from my mind, the furthest that I wanted to think of. My father was the first to pass. He was having to experience pneumonia for the 3rd time. And because he had it before, we just assumed that this was another one of those, the doctors are going to do what they do, and this was going to be fine until the weeks started to pass and he was degrading more than he did the 1st 2 times with pneumonia. So during his final week, there was that slow realization of he's not getting any better. He's only getting worse. And so I would take every opportunity I had to whisper into his ear, because they told us, even though he had a tracheotomy at this point, he may not be able to speak and he's not awake and alert, but he can still hear you, so continue talking to him. So I would whisper into his ear, I understand that you have to go and this is your time, but it's not my time. I have to stay here. We had been taking turns, my sisters and I, staying at the hospital. I said, this was a Friday and it was Memorial Day weekend. And so I said, I have to go home to sleep. It is my turn to rest. And I understand if you have to let go while I'm gone, but please don't wait till I come back. So I left and went home for the weekend and just tried to pray as much as I could, hopeful. And then Monday morning came around, and while I was sleeping, I suddenly started to see white crosses kind of floating into my vision in that third eye vision. And it was odd, but it kind of pulled me in from the deep sleep and into this awareness. And I kind of sat with it for a little bit, and then I fell back to sleep. And then suddenly I felt a kiss on my cheek and could smell the sweet aroma in the room that smelled like sugar cookies. And I sat up at that point and I woke up and I just looked around the room expecting and waiting to see someone there. And in that moment, in the dark room still, I realized his soul is trying to let go. And we have to make the decision to let him go, because he was on life support at that point. I tried to go back to sleep, oddly, after realizing it, but still in denial. So I went back to sleep. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, my phone rang. And it was my sister saying the doctors are here. They're saying he's not going to be lasting that much longer. You need to get here. And so I got there and we had this. It was that Monday evening, Memorial Day. He actually lasted throughout the day, and they started the comfort care and made him comfortable, and the medication started. And it wasn't until 9 p.m. that night that he passed. And so in the hospital room, the light was very dim. So it wasn't the bright halogen, like harsh light. And so in the moment that we all surrounded him, holding hands, praying for him and telling him it's okay, you don't have to be strong, you can let go. It's okay, you can let go. And as he was, I guess, taking those last breaths, and in the lighting of the room, I could see the light in his body and the gown that he was wearing and the sheets covering him. You could see on his neck and his arms that his skin color just changed. It was like this light just kind of came up and out of him. And that last and final breath of the body just kind of releasing. And it was in that moment that it was like, he just passed, he's gone. But I felt like, well, his body is here. Now, where did he go? And so driving home, I just fixated on the crescent moon. And it was like searching, looking, waiting to find him. And so it was a weird feeling that I wasn't ready to let him go. Like, I understood if he was done and it was his time to go, but I didn't want to let him go because his daddy's little girl. And our relationship had just been repaired just 2 years before this. And so I went to bed that night and woke up the next two mornings with this gaping heavy weight in my chest, this grieving just set in like nothing I'd ever experienced. And on the third morning, early in those like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, I remembered feeling a presence next to my bed. I mean, if it was someone leaning into the bed, it was very noticeable. And I didn't open my eyes because at first it was like, holy crap, what's going on? And then I felt what seemed like a hand that scooped into my chest. It was like it just reached in and pulled that grief and just pulled it out and just reached in. And then there was this warmth, this beautiful warmth that all I remember saying was, thank you, Jesus. And I fell asleep. And so when I woke up that morning, it was the phone call that came from my mother this time in this delusional panic when she had this realization that her then ex-husband had passed, but overnight, after being married for 37 years, it seemed like overnight she just had this psychotic break and she woke up as the grieving widow. And so from that point on, I stepped in as her caregiver for the 6 years after. And during that time period, my dad has stayed with me and had been with me. And there was times when I was with her in her memory care community that we would play games together. My mother and I would play Scrabble or dominoes. And there were times that I would get these thoughts, ask her this, tell her that. And one afternoon that I was playing with her, it came out of my mouth before I even realized what was being said. And I just looked at her and said, oh, baby. And it was like, where'd that, I mean, I'm poor baby. I'm sorry. And I tried to cover with it, but it just was the weirdest feeling. It's like, where did that come from? And I felt that he was seeing her through me and watching her decline and just feeling that. And so a lot of what I experienced with my mother, I felt it, but I didn't feel 100%. It was like I had a buffer, a spiritual buffer, so that I could continue to do what I needed to do with her. And then the Sunday before she passed, I was outside in my backyard under my meditation tree. My name is Lucy. And while I was meditating, I felt the energy just kind of leave me. Like, he knew the time was coming. I did not. And so I thought it was really odd, and it was bizarre that he had been with me for 6 years and now he chose to leave. And I was upset because it was like, wait, now of all time, I still need you. You can't go. And from Sunday to Wednesday morning, she started having seizures. And it wasn't until she passed that I realized he's not the omnipresent. He can't be everywhere all the time like God would be. So he had to leave me in order to be there to welcome her home. And so that Sunday morning, she passed. And I was expecting there to be a similar light within her leaving, the spirit leaving her. And there very well could have been, but because we tried to make it a point that Sunday morning, there was a bright blue sky, clear and sunny. And I thought, because of the state of her mind, there was no question. She was always directionally challenged when she was driving elsewhere. And I thought, there's no doubt she will know where to go and go straight wherever she needs to and have the sun, the light of the day to do it in. And so when she passed, it was definitely a change in color, but not like that defined yellowish kind of light that rose above. And so since then, I get my dad every now and again. And there's times that I feel like I'm grieving more than usual. And so I'll reach out and say, I haven't seen you in a while. I miss you. I really need a hug. And that night I will have a lucid dream and he will come forward and he'll remind me, I'm still here, still here. And so I feel bad because I feel like I'm holding him here for me when he could be off experiencing all kinds of places, but it is what has become my life. I feel the more confident I feel in life and accepting, and the grieving kind of gradually lessens, the less I feel him with me. It's almost like the training wheels. Like, I'm going off to school and he's like, okay, you've got this. I can step back a little bit more. So I feel him a little bit less, but he still comes through. And when I'm cooking in the kitchen, like, he's right there, a little bit more salt, not too much. Okay. Now trying to let that simmer for a little bit. So that's kind of my experience with my parents passing.
Well, that's quite a succinct wrap there, Jessica. Thank you so much for sharing.
Definitely.
Bobby looked like she had a couple of comments.
You might actually want to look into developing your clairvoyance abilities, because what you describe is not what everyone experiences. Part of it, to my mind, is that you believe it and therefore you experience it even stronger and more, because that actually allows the walls of your mind to let things in. But Yeah. And I think I know why there was a difference, but that's neither here nor there. And it is my theory rather than I am giving you a reading and I'm seeing that as an actual reality. So I'm going to keep my mouth shut on that because, but the scooping, all of that. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. And I think your dad was telling you, I'm going to let go, not you need to let me go. And he actually can be omnipresent because there is no time for him. He can be here, there, everywhere. You are not infringing on his time. In fact, you're probably enhancing his time. And the more you listen to him, the more you'll enhance it. And that's all. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. Go ahead, Daniel.
Ay-yi-yi. I have lots of thoughts about that. You know, I think there's this thing called grace. I think a lot of us believe we know there's grace. And I think when we lose somebody, there's just this presence of grace that can come to us. And it's us who opens to receive it or not, you know. And like Bobby said, I'm like, oh, honey, I don't think you can hold your father back. You know, you can't hold a soul back. You don't control any of that. And I think part of the grace is that we get what we need to heal. Yeah. I've been death and dying since I was 23, because I lived through the AIDS crisis. So I was very familiar with death and saw a lot of people die. And, you know, I've had all my, you know, been to all those people who channel and all the, John Edwards was a part Hay House author for a while and all Sylvia Brown and there's more, but I can't remember their names. So I've been around it. One of the things that I'm in now, and I think is, I have a much deeper respect for the mystery of it. And so, when my mom was dying, it was 10 days, and I flew from here, from Albuquerque to Honolulu. The hospice worker asked me if I had to give them permission whether to stop food and water. I'm like, well, is that what I should do? Tell me what? I don't know. And so we did. We stopped the food and water. And he said, the maximum she'll be alive is 7 days. So I got on the plane, and I went over there, and 7 days came and went. And she was still alive. And I thought the caregiver was giving her food and water, you know, because they said 1 teaspoon of food can keep them alive for a long time. And I said, how do I ask this question to the caregiver? I don't want to accuse her, but my mom's not dying. She said, no, I'm not feeding her. I said, are you giving her ice cubes? Are you this, you know? And it sounds terrible because it sounds like you want your mother to die. But I did want my mother to die. It was time. It's just this clock that ticks and you wait and you wait. And I would drive from where I was staying to the care home and it's half an hour and I would just wait and I would get angry that I'm like, here's the 8th day, here's the 9th day, you're not dead. And finally on the 10th day, she died. And being present, and I kept trying to say, oh, I want to be there when she dies. But that was me. You know, it's like, I don't have control over that unless I camp next to her bed for 24 hours, 24/7, right? But I was there when she died. And that was one of the most beautiful gifts I've ever received from my mother, is being present at her death. And Jessica, you made your emotion like this. That's exactly how I experienced my mom dying as well. And I just saw life leave her body. I looked down at her feet and there was no life. And I watched it go up her body. And do you know, my mother was not conscious. She hadn't moved in a week. She literally got off the bed and made this huge sound. I went back down, got up again. And my two uncles are there with me. And we're like, oh! And I stood up and it was like, that was the last bit of life and breath squeezed out of her. And it was like, I saw it and it just, someone else made this. It just went, I think it was you, Jessica. It was like this. And I went, oh my God, there it went. And everything that was Karen was left behind. You know, the first thought I had was, wow, it really is all an illusion. And the second thought was, and I don't know where this thought came from, like, there is no hell. I mean, what could burn? What could suffer? What could, you know? And I was like, there was such a conviction, and like, no one can ever, ever speak to me again about hell. I'm like, okay, please, you know, you carry on. But that's not true. And yeah, and that was a gift, a beautiful, beautiful gift. I couldn't feel her. The next day I went to the beach I go to when my dogs die, anybody dies, if I'm there. And I'm like, Mom, where are you? Gone, man. She was out. I could not feel a thing, you know, but she wanted out. You know, people, when we say, how long do you want to be around? She willed herself to die. She said to me, Danny boy, I want to die. And I said, Mom, I understand. And bam, 3 years later, gone. Anyway, that was my experience of my mother dying. And it was a gift. It was a gift that I, more than anything she's ever given me physically, doesn't count. So it's a beautiful thing to be present when someone's dying. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And be sure to share that writing with us when you're ready. Yeah, you, your friends.
Oh, this. I thought I didn't write about my mother dying. Okay. Okay. You want me to?
Sure.
So let me tell you this. He died on July 27th. And we were on a very lively text the night before he died. And Lynn knows about this. I kind of broke down and unmuted. I still haven't watched that video. I contacted his wife last week because I remembered that he was writing something in my house. He was helping me take notes. I was preparing for a talk, that Hay House talk. And I was writing it, and he was taking all the notes. And, you know, when someone dies, I think one of the things that I love is their handwriting. It's like a fingerprint. It's unique, and it's them expressing themselves on the page. And I'm like, oh God, please, I hope I kept that. I don't know where it is, but I hope I kept it. And I found it last week. And I was 99% sure it was his. And it was in my favorite color. He used my purple pen. I had to text his wife and say, I just need you to confirm. I'm 99% sure this is his, but I want absolute confirmation. Is this Jose's handwriting? Now, here's something interesting about handwriting that I had no other, 20 years, no other handwriting from him, because we don't do handwriting anymore, right? Everything's technology, text and emails, and there's no letters and cards. We do electronic cards. So I found the handwriting, and of course I cried. So that was a confirmation that it was his handwriting. So we had connected again, and she had said to me, Daniel, English is a problem. So for communicating, she sent me a little 1 minute and 21 second voice message. And she said, on July 23rd, he was in his Course in Miracles group. That was 4 days before he died. And they had read this poem. And she said, so I'm sending it to you because this is Jose, 4 days before he died. St. Augustine, don't cry if you love me. Death is nothing. I just went to the other side. I am I, you are you, as we were to one another. As we were to one another, we will always be. Call me as you always call me. Talk to me as you always did. Don't change the tone of your voice. Don't be somber or sad. Keep laughing at what we used to laugh together. Pray, smile, think of me, pray with me. At home, let my name sound. Let my name sound as it always did, with no fuss, no shadow. Life still means what it has always meant. It's what it has always been. The thread isn't cut. Why should I be out of your mind? just because I am out of sight. I am not far, just on the other side of the path. All is fine, you'll see. Soon, you will know how to reach my heart. Soon, you will feel my love again. Wipe your tears and don't cry if you love me. And so I was like, oh, I love the coincidence of that coincidence, you know.
Synchronicity.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Daniel, and your friend.
Yes, Jose.
Jose.
And his wife is Diana, sent it to me. And I met Jose 20 years ago at a Carolyn Mace, her first two-year program in sacred contracts. And you know, he's very conservative and unlike me. And so I love the unlikely match.
That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
So you receive a prognosis of 1 month to live, but you feel pretty damn healthy. You A, throw your own celebration of life party and take a dream vacation. B, keep it on the down low, telling only family and close friends. Or C, fight like hell to prove the doctor's wrong.
That's a good one.
A.
Yeah, just party it up and take a dream vacation. Yeah.
That was my first instinct too.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Yeah, I would have to party up. What a complete, what's the word I'm looking for? When somebody goes against their act, what they say? Hypocrite. Hypocrite I would be if I did not party it up and make a whole great big thing of it. And Daniel, you're correct. The only evidence of hell I actually see is when we mourn people too hard. I'm sorry. Mm. And when you hurt children, they come from a different spot, people who hurt children. It's, yeah, because they are the most innocent. If you take away the innocence of a child, I'm not quite sure, but you have to learn in a different way and you come out of something different. So, but there is no hell.
There's no hell.
So that's all I wanted to say. And yeah, I'd have a big party, of course. It'd be kind of silly if I didn't.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having your own celebration of life party and taking a dream vacation is sort of like C, because you might not be fighting to prove the doctor's wrong, but you'd be kind of proving them wrong because you were partying it up and just enjoying it anyway. Tony.
So A sounds interesting. I wouldn't want to travel. I've done enough traveling and I think I would want to be home because most of the people I care about are in my community. So spending time partying with them would be more fun. I'm actually looking at my book launch events as partying with people I haven't seen for a long time. So my first in-person event is October 15th. And I mean, we're sending out about 100 invitations and hopefully some people will have that date open. And it's at a friend's house, you know, we have mutual friends. So I think a series of parties now makes more sense than waiting. there is one place I want to travel to, but my mobility issues make it probably impossible. And that's to the Galapagos Islands. Oh.
Fabulous.
To be with the animals. I love animals. I'm tired of old churches and the history of the city and cobblestone walks. It's like, no, get me out in the wilderness. So I don't know how that'll evolve. It could happen. The other thing that I thought of, you know, I've known some people who have fought the diagnosis, you know, were determined to live, and I'm very impressed with them. You know, that they started seeking alternative healthcare, alternative measures. Not any of them survived the process, but they fought hard. And that was apparently what they were supposed to do. And so given the situation, I'm not sure what I would do because I'm not doing anything now that is outside of, I mean, other than meditation and, you know, my self-care isn't really up to par for the health issues that I'm dealing with. So that is something that I intend to focus on, but I'm not very good with routine. That is one of my life challenges, is routine and self-care. I do know that. So that's something to look at. So thanks for bringing that up again. And, you know, I do look toward the medical profession because that's my background and my training. But I know there's a lot of other things out there. And I've met a lot of people that have healed themselves with many other types of practices. So that'll be an exploration for me. So I think that answers that question.
Galapagos is beautiful. Absolutely heaven magic. It's magic. It's part of Ecuador and it's controlled, which it should be, because people, you know, tourism has destroyed the planet, right? And I contributed a hell of a lot to that destruction. And it's like kind of mean to say, oh, tourism destroyed the planet now that you've seen the world. You know, what about everyone who hasn't? But I'm talking about the way that tourism is done. Galapagos is like all these islands, and there is protection and to keep these species going. And it's, you know, you on a boat and you get off on the islands and you hike. Because I was going to say, Tony, you can just stay on the boat. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah, the movies I saw are beautiful.
And what's the guy who did the Evolution? What's his name?
Darwin.
Darwin. Darwin was there and he saw his place. And, you know, there's these mammoth tortoises.
Yeah.
They're enormous. Yeah. You're like, oh, my God. There was something that they said. And when I went there, I thought there is a model on this planet for how we can live in harmony. And it was the Galapagos. That was the place. Because I'm like, you know, I don't know if peace is possible. These humans have always been violent since the beginning of time. And you know, and I'm like, I don't see a model on the planet. Yeah. I don't, until I went there. But of course, they're not human. They're animals. But what happens is there was nobody kills. The animals don't kill for sport. They kill to eat. That's it. And two sharks had come in that were starting to hunt for just, they weren't hungry. They started to hunt. And they said something that always stuck with me. There was no hunting because there was no fear.
Mm.
They didn't hunt for sport. They only hunted for food, right? And they killed those two sharks that came in and started doing that. They removed the sharks. And, you know, that shark, I don't know if it was where it came from and what had happened to their species and whatever, but yeah, so that was an interesting thing.
I can't believe you've been there. That's so cool. Yeah, the tortoises, there's birds, there's flamingos, and it's heavily populated, it looks like.
Right.
It just looks beautiful. Just looks amazing.
Blue-footed. They were blue, these footed birds. Yeah, it was just amazing.
Okay, so I should go and sit on the boat, Daniel? Yeah?
You can just stay on the boat.
The boat looks so luxurious. It looks like a real bucket list trip. It really does.
Can you walk?
I do walk. I use a walker most of the time. I'm having a surgical procedure next week, so I may be relieved of some of the pain, but I don't know how that'll look in a couple of months.
Right.
Christina, did you have anything you'd like to contribute?
You'd have to repeat the question because I forgot all the other answers now.
Was the most recent question about if you got a prognosis, if you would have a big celebration of life party and go on your dream vacation, or keep it on the down low and just tell a few friends or family, or if you would fight like hell with the doctors to change the prognosis?
Oh, yeah, no, I'd go for A for sure.
Yeah.
That was easy.
That was easy. How about you, Annie?
I'd go for B. I'd keep it on the down low, quiet, just with close loved ones. I wouldn't have a big party. I am more of an introvert.
It would probably go with personality somewhat, right? How you'd answer that.
Yeah, I think so.
Annie, how about this one? This is something that I realized is kind of shocking because I haven't included it in any of my important papers yet, is about personal belongings. Like if you have any items, journals, videos, other compromising paraphernalia you would not want discovered after your death, who might you enlist to manage or dispose of it?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I've kept a journal for my whole life and I've got all of them. And some of them I was working through. I have six siblings. And also I went through a lot of hard times with my parents when I was growing up and it's all documented. But I don't know if I'd want my daughter reading a lot of that. So that's a very good question. I've thought about all my journals, and I know people burn them. They burn them now. But because I'm doing so much writing and going back and reading them, I don't know. And I don't know if I would enlist someone. I know people who are so organized and they have someone who's in charge of everything on their computer. And I don't know. I have work to do and decisions to make. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, well, thank you for your considered thoughts on it spontaneously there, because it certainly is an issue. I mean, I have my list of passwords that's kind of in the process of being tidied up. It's kind of a mess right now, but it's been on my list for months to get that finished. So it's tidier because there's so many accounts and subscriptions and bills and passwords. And yet there's also, right, all the content on the laptop and how to find things and my current projects and, you know, who to let know. And the thing about journals is, yeah, I've been gradually burning them incrementally, but I just came upon something from 1997 when I was working on this movie set in British Columbia. There was like four of us. We applied as a team for prop food. And I just read about 10 or 12 pages of the days, like from June to August, of what had happened. And like, I hardly remember any of it. And so I really appreciate that I've kept notes for myself now. And this year marks 50 years since I got my driver's license at 16. And it also marks over 50 years, I would say 55 years, yes, since I started keeping a journal. That's a lot of journals. So you can just go along and think, oh, well, they're safe for another day. But somebody's going to have to deal with them. And I don't even read them a lot. I try to go through and find highlights to just incorporate into writings for fun and whoever knows why. But I just feel like there's a life on the other side of figuring out the journal puzzle. And I'm determined to live long enough to see what life is like on the other side. Yes, go ahead, Bobby.
I don't know if it's off topic or not, but this actually reminds me. My daughter had a job where she was reading soldiers' letters home in World War I and World War II. She had to decipher them. It was for a clip campaign where they were looking at. But those letters were very, very personal. These men wouldn't want them read by some young lady at a university, but the insight and the personal experience that she gained, and then she would tell us about it, and it moved that human experience, because we learn from where we've been. So honestly, Lynn, I bet you your journals should actually be published one day, 50 years after your death, and people can say, this was what life was like being a Canadian woman traveling all over Canada, blah, 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 blah. Like, you could be Nellie McClung, for goodness sakes. So, Nellie McClung. Anyone? Canadian? Anyway, she's like first Canadian pioneer. Anywho, that wrote books. I think that there's value in them. And if you can get past your own personal stuff, then donate them, please. That's what I say. But I don't journal because I don't write stuff. And I don't want other people knowing about. That's me.
Right. Well, thanks for that. Donating them. That's another step. All entirely. I still need to curate them then before that might happen. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, you'll be dead. You may not need to worry about what happens to them, Lynn. You know. So if you have been to your attorney and you have a will or directions on what to do on your death, you have an executor of the will. And in the will, you can leave instructions for your executor on what to do with your personal possessions. So, you know, you might collect the journals and put them in a box and label them and identify where they're located so that the person coming in to clean up after you has an idea of how to go through your things. So not everybody in the world is going to see them. There's one person that you identify, or it could be a couple people that you ask to go through your possessions, and however you decide to give them away or throw them away. That's where the instructions are. I would assume it's similar in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
That it would work that way.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's a good point, Tony. Thank you for that. And yes, I do have people in charge to advocate acting on my behalf. I'm just surprised that I hadn't thought of putting that in when I realized that recently. So yeah, I am updating some of those documents. It's amazing how the time goes by and, you know, you want to just keep things up to date. So yeah, that's going on to my list to include in there, just some cautionary tales to head into that segment. Thanks, Tony. And Bobby, go ahead.
To that idea, Tony, I think that's a wonderful idea, but I think your executor is probably your most responsible friend, whereas you want your friend that could help you bury or get rid of the body to come in and get your porn and other things like that.
I'm sorry, I don't have anything like that.
Oh, okay.
If I do, I've buried it in my subconscious. And again, I'm not going to be embarrassed because I'm not going to be here.
Right, right.
You know?
My friend Olivia died this year. I have lost two close friends. I thought, oh my God, who took out her vibrators before her son came? You know? And I don't live in Oregon, so I couldn't do it for her. But someone else told me, my other friend said, come to my house and take all the porn out before they come in and they go through everything. But now all your porn's on the internet. It's not like there's tapes and DVDs and stuff. But, you know, Lynn, I struggle with this because are we just control freaks that we're trying to control it from the other side about what happens to everything? I mean, of course, I think if you have kids and there's money, stuff like that. But I'm like, burn it. I don't care. You know, I'm gone. It all served me while I was alive. And I loved my things. I love my stuff. Otherwise, I wouldn't have it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't care.
You got a good point about the control freak business. I mean, I've got this memorial bench, right, as I mentioned. And I've got the birth plaque and the little inspiring words bronze plaque. And I've got a space for the death plaque with inspiring words. And the new guys at the cemetery recently told me that I can proofread my death plaque ahead of time. And, you know, and then obviously I just have to trust that my executor could get the date right and proofed, but I could at least cover off the rest of it, because I saw a plaque down the way from my bench and they had spelled forever with an extra V. So it was like forever, yeah. You know, it's like that in bronze.
Yeah. But that's just the editing part of you. That's the part that shouldn't be wrong, but, you know, it's this imperfect life. This very imperfect life.
Well, yeah, but it's the last thing, right? All I'll have is my bench and my three bronze plaques, right?
It's funny how we want to be remembered. We want to be loved. And, you know, Tony, it's interesting that you said now in your life, you have this partner and you have these friends and you're an only child, so you are alone. Everything I've heard you talk about has been about connection and connecting, and how it's a wonderful time in your life now. And so, you know, of course, we want to live when it's good. But that's lovely that you've now managed to create connections with people, because we want to be loved. That's all we, any of us want, right? To be loved. Are you leaving?
Yes, yeah. I need to jump off real quick. I'm sorry, guys. This was awesome.
Good to see you.
Good
to see you, Jessica.
Take care.
Yeah, me too.
Is Annie still there? Did she go?
Thank you, Christina.
Annie's gone. Thanks a lot, all.
Annie's gone. I just wanted to say enjoy Japan.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Be well.
Nice to see you all. Thanks. See you soon.
Chapter 21, right, Lynn? It's all about love.
That's
undervaluing love in the caregiving relationship. So busy doing, you forget to love.
Mm-hmm.
Give and receive love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome.
Oh, I've enjoyed this, Lynn. I'm giving a presentation tomorrow morning, so I'm going to spend the next couple hours just getting into that and getting prepared.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. Awesome.
See you soon.
Bye.
All right. Bye, Bobby. Good to see you. Bye, Daniel.
Bye. See you. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, you're welcome. You too, everybody.
So the three of us. Bobby, I wanted to ask you, you know, like, I think that, you know, we make it all up. And that was one of the most liberating things I've learned in the last decade. And we're story-making machines, and we need to find meaning. And so, like, when Jessica, this all helped her, and it's real for her. And that's all that matters.
Yep.
You know? And I used to be so into, oh, my God, their spirit came, and they're this, that. And I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, like, I talked to Jose, and I thought, Daniel, you're not going to make this shit up, you know? Don't make it up. And then I was one day, you know, I looked over there and I imagined his body there, his height. There wasn't a body. And I thought, oh, is that real or not real? Real, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do remember in a contemplation, I asked him, I said, okay, Jose, just tell me what it's like on the other side. Just tell me what, because I'm into space. I'm into all these new pictures, right? So we can't even measure it. You know, it was like this thing is that it's more magnificent than I could ever say. But there was no body, you know, of course. It was like a line. Of course, my mind created that line because you have to perceive something.
You have to be able to perceive something. Right.
Yeah. That's what I think of your work. We help people to get through it, the loss, the death. You know, but I don't know. You know what I've been wondering for a long time? When we talk about saints and all these people that have left, right? Mystics. I'm like, I don't know if we stay individuated. You know, there's an individuation here. Are we incarnate and we take a form? The parents give that form a name and we go through our experience and then we die, right? We off the soul goes. And when we go, well, you're certainly not your name, right?
Nope.
You're certainly not a body.
Nope.
And like, when I look out in space, I'm like, there's everything that we don't see, right? You see these pictures.
Yeah.
And it's like, honey, what about everything that's there that you can't see?
But the negative space.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm saying. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I think you're sort of wondering what's left, what remains. After the remains.
Well, I know that there's everything on earth, it means nothing. It's here for your experience. Whatever you have, you come. This soul needs an experience.
Yeah.
And you came for the human experience, absolutely, 100%. But I'm like, after you leave, I mean, and maybe you could shed light on this. I don't see something staying individuated. Do we become one? We're one with all. I know we cannot comprehend it with this mind.
So no, absolutely. Language, no.
Right? We're trying to language something that's, we have to use human language for things that aren't human.
Yeah. And it's like the collective consciousness.
Yeah.
Or the group consciousness. Yeah. The way that we are actually connected. If I get into a bad mood, you can actually start to feel my bad mood and it'll affect you in the way that those sorts of negative feelings will affect you. It's an excellent question. When I talk to people on the other side and you know what? I actually think that's part of ascension. Kind of like when Jess talking about not being able to feel her father quite as much as she did at the first, becoming more at home with who he is and his soul is ascending ever so slightly. So you don't feel them in the same sort of way. Maybe you're right. Maybe when they come into that ascension, they become part of the higher collective and therefore their energy is masked and becomes part of a bigger thing that we can't individually feel or see in that way anymore.
Why would they hang out? For us.
Oh, because this whole thing, it's not even, they hang out, but they do what they need to do as well. They move, they can do all the things they need to do. It's so infinite.
And take another form in this whole universe. This cannot be the only planet that has life, right?
No, it's the only realm.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And veils, you know, I'm like, okay, there's a veil, and then right beyond that veil, we can see, right? Because we're not supposed to see, or whatever. It's so funny what humans are doing. This species will be over. I'm like, okay, so what? You're not dead. You're going to die in your body. The planet will wipe us right off. Bye-bye, humans. See you.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah, it's just another part of the test to see what you do with it. I even actually wonder if people reincarnate into different time periods and start to build that up even more. It is actually that porous of an energy, so we can just keep on influxing new energy into it.
But if there's no time, this is going to be the hardest thing for you to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
There is no time.
And it's limitless.
And it's all happening simultaneously. That's why it doesn't matter whether I believe in past lives or not. That's irrelevant. But I'm like, well, where's the past life? Do you know? We can't even go back to last week. Right? Hello? I'm like, it's like, and the best explanation I heard was the figure eight.
Yes.
It's all on the
It's a symbol everywhere.
But it's your past lives are all somewhere on the line, the spectrum.
And crossing and actually constantly, because you're constantly affected from past lives. So it brought you to here.
And you know, the reason I don't talk about past lives are I'm like, I don't care about any of your past lives, because all I care about is right now, right here. Mm-hmm. Right now, right here. We have to talk about now.
And it's conjecture.
Yeah. But I understand what's happening is they want a reason why this is happening. They want reasons. And Carolyn Mace would say the thing that stands between you and your soul is reason. Give me a reason. Because your soul just has an experience, right? And even all the things we say about the soul, we make it up based on what we experience or think, want to experience. But the infinity, so if there is no time, right? If there's no time, which all masters basically said, it was written that, so you have the figure eight, all your lives, past lives, quote, are happening simultaneously.
Yes.
You notice the TV shows now? They're going back in time, present time. The beautiful woman and the handsome man. It's like this skipping, right? To present and past. And so the figure eight was the best image that I had read of trying to explain it. Because life, the hardest part for us to get is it's not linear.
Yeah.
And that's what I was trying to teach as well. And Mary Margaret Moore, who channeled Bartholomew, the best channel material I ever read, out of print now, said that karma isn't A leads to B, B leads to C. Karma is like a supernova, an explosion.
And
parts go everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we say, oh, you hurt me, you stole from me, someone's going to steal from you. And I would teach this in prison. You're probably going to lose something. But it's not going to be because you stole money, you're going to lose money. You're going to lose something that's valuable to you. Yeah. You know, that's karma. And I don't even know if I believe in karma anymore. I don't. It's very interesting because, you know, before Louise died, Louise Hay, before she had a stroke, I was wondering, is it true that what we give out comes back? Is it true?
No, it's actually what's in our heart comes back.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, does something have to come back? You know, it's like that's another thing we've imposed on this. And I always think, no, it's not about what you believe. It's about why you want to believe it.
Oh, that's an excellent thought. Yeah.
Why do you want that to be true?
Certain faiths will have different experiences on the other side.
Yeah. And what are we telling ourselves about what we experienced? It's like I've worked with criminals for 22 years and I loved them. I just absolutely, they made me a better human. Them. None of the gurus I met and all the rich and famous teachers, they didn't. Those people did. I walked into a prison every single day.
Wow.
The dark, right?
Yeah.
It was like I saw a part of humanity that was so real. They didn't pretend because everything was stripped away from them. So yeah. What am I going to pretend with? We're all in the same clothes. We're all eating the same food. You know, the only thing that they could, I guess if you worked out, your body would be nicer. So they would have this one thing they could sculpt.
Yeah, and control.
Because they had nothing, control over nothing. Innocence is a judgment. Innocent, guilty. Those are polarities that we impose. You know, why does a person fall off a horse? Who's that guy, Christopher Reeve? You know, it's like if that's part of his soul's contract,
yeah,
he didn't do something bad, and that's why he fell off the horse. He had to have something, quote, bad happen to him so he could step into his soul's higher purpose.
But so, was it bad or was it just something that happened in his life?
Very thing that was the worst thing that happened to you is what made you the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
What had you get up to share with people, so now you take a meal, right?
Yeah, right.
So something bad can happen, quote bad, can happen to you, right? There's no explanation why I had to be sexually abused throughout my childhood. I must never look for a reason, because that stops the progress of the soul from healing and going forward. This happened, period, done. Now, what do you do with it? What do you do with what happened to you? So now, for instance, I was horribly persecuted. I was very gay, coming out, you know, very feminine, because I tried to emulate the women in my life because I loved them so much. So of course I want to wear my grandmother's high heels, and I loved femininity. So I get fucking persecuted, teased, right? 14 years old, I go into this all boys Catholic high school known for jocks, barrel sports players. And then there's me. But St. Luke's wasn't just a school, it was a family tradition. So now Daniel Peralta is going to break the tradition and just shame the family.
A legacy.
Those men, they never beat me up. They didn't rape me. But I go forward and it creates some kind of the pain, the persecution created in me, empathy. So now, fast forward, I go into a prison. Mm-hmm. I was literally writing on the board one day. I had something I wanted to write up on the board. And I hear them talking in the background. All of a sudden, I could hear St. Louis High School. That's how the boys sounded. And I froze and I went, oh my God, it's them. And I turned around and went, I have goosebumps everywhere. I said, it's you, not the exact boys, but that energy, that thing. It was them, and I was in front of my persecutors. And I'm trying to help you. I'm like, is this not the epitome of forgiveness? Without me trying to say I'm going to forgive. I need to forgive. Okay, well, whatever. It happened automatically. Because I was in, my whole life was about healing.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I went in there to heal myself. It looked like I was going to heal them. But yeah. I was healing myself in that for 14 years before I left Hawaii. And then I left, and those 3 years, and then I went back. When I went back, I was going to Arizona. They asked me to go and train a teacher in emotional literacy. I went to Arizona and I was training the teacher. And I said, this is where I'm going to train her. I want a classroom and I want to do my work. And she has to watch. And then every day we'll debrief for a week. All of a sudden my circuits came alive. I was alive and I needed to get back to work. So I would go there quarterly, stay for 3 weeks. And I would drive home at night and I would think, why is this so different? It's not the same. And I went home and I meditated that night and I said, oh my God, I'm 100% present. Like I've never been in my life for them. I had no more stuff to heal. I was all healed and it was finished and I left Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Now I'm called back. Is that not the hero's journey, right? I'm called back. I go in and I'm like, whoa, just the energy with everybody was right there. And I'm like, this, I kind of happened, but not like this. Now I am, and I realize the gift of my empathy is a result of what happened there. Had I not experienced such pain, how could I know their pain? Exactly. How could I not know someone else's pain?
Yeah.
I can sit next to someone and I'm like, oh, and they're beautiful. I remember we were in a psychic training thing, many in the 90s. And there was a woman, and I sat next to her, and she was effervescent and lovely and talked like this. And everyone said, you're so positive, you're so this. I mean, I sit next to her and I'm like, oh my God, there's so much pain inside her. And I'm like, you know, but I can't say that. But I told her on the side, I said, you know, you want to hear something I'm picking up? I asked for permission. And of course, it was true, but it didn't need to be public. But I can recognize it because it lived in me. There was a time at a point when I was in Arizona, I recognized sex abuse, the energetic field. I was next to a man. I'm like, oh God, he was sexually abused. A lot of guys would tell the truth. They come out on their own.
Yeah.
And I remember this guy, and I had him get up. And I would tell them, have them tell the stories of their tattoos. And he, his body was like from his neck down. Half of it was yin. It was yin and yang. And it was like shadow and light, feminine and masculine. So he had this beautiful Kuan Yin on his body here. And then he had this skull and this devil on the, oh, I have goosebumps again. On this side. And I'm like, oh my God, I would have him tell the story. I would have every man, if they were nice tattoos, I would tell the story of why you wanted that and how you got it and has it changed? Do you feel the same? And I sat next to that guy and I'm like, you know, I was navigating my way. Do I say something? Do I not say something? When do you stay silent?
Yeah.
You know, when do you shut up? Just because you know doesn't mean you have to say it. It took a long time to get to that maturity. So I just said to him privately, I said, can I ask you a question? Were you sexually abused as a child? He goes, oh, you can't talk about things like that. And I'm like, okay, he just answered my question.
Yeah.
But then my ego, and it wasn't my ego because I didn't do it in front of everyone. It was me training. Mm-hmm. Me learning, is what I'm picking up accurate?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's like, is it accurate? Because Carolyn Mays talks, she says, you don't need to be right. You need to be accurate.
Yeah, and your ability to know yourself made it so you could tell it was him, not you, when you could feel that energy.
Yeah, because yeah.
The piece made that your own.
Absolutely. Right, right, right. But I had been working on all my sex abuse.
Yeah.
So and I moved through trauma healing. So that all that trauma was gone. And, you know, it was them who said, tell me why in 14 years before that, I'd never had guys open up about their sexual abuse like that. I've only had a few. Once I did mine, now they're all bringing up sex abuse. It's also part of the time. Now male sexual abuse is more, I don't say open, people are willing to reveal it more.
Yeah, absolutely. People are more at home with that sort of victimization, let's say.
So, you know, Lynn, I'm writing this last scene with my father for 20 years. I couldn't write this.
Right.
And I sit down with myself. Why are you doing this, Daniel? Why? You can have a nice life. Your husband says you don't have to work. You know, you can just stay home. I can't do this forever. I've got to go back to work just for my own soul. But and I'm like, why are you doing this? And people are so mean. And I'm like, I don't want to go out there because they're so mean. You know, you go on social media, you're like, oh my God, this is fucking horrible.
Yeah.
People are so hateful.
Yeah.
And why would you put this information out? You know, because now they can attack you. The whole answer to that question was, I meditate on these things. What was the answer, Daniel? Oh, for all the men who died and couldn't say it. They went to the grave with their secrets.
Yeah.
And they never told anyone. And for them, I will open my mouth. Anyway, Nice to talk to you.
Well, my goodness. Thank you, Daniel and Bobby.
I'm glad we got this time alone. Because I wanted to say the things to you. I wanted to talk. But it's not appropriate in the group.
And they show me that all the time, that people will make contracts with their spirit guides where I'm going to go through this and I'm going to go through this and I'm going to go through this. And in fact, actually say we as a group are going to go through this. And whoever picks the short straw is the poor sap that has to do it. Because the other spirit guides, my spirit guides are all comfy, cozy, all happy dappy. Yeah. They don't have to go through the stuff. They just watch me go through stuff.
Yeah.
And we go through the stuff that we're supposed to help other people with. I've been through a lot of death. A lot of death. Yeah. So, and now mental health and death are the things I center on.
I think, what the fuck is this all for? You know, I'm like, I love the human experience, but we're privileged. We're very privileged, the three of us.
Yeah, and we can even sit and talk about it.
Now we're sitting here with computers in our homes talking about this. Mm-hmm. People are out there dying.
Yeah.
I was watching Invasion, although I don't like it anymore, because it's all about they're attacking. And I think, how come we're not making more movies on the help that's here?
Paranoia and the angry instead of the happy and the hopeful.
And the grace.
They love the fear. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. I'm so glad you were
on. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Lynn. Bye, you darling women. I'm going to go see my husband now.
Okay, say hi to Michael. We will talk.
I will. Bye. We'll see each other again.
Yes. Two days later. So we've got my mom's story of what happened at Christmas just before she died. We've got me asking you what mom would like to contribute from the differentiated part of spirit, in conjunction with Daniel talking about that with us, and he really appreciated our finish up. And Teresa, who's been on before, she was traveling and she apologized. She wrote last night, she was sorry to miss it, and she was inspired by my story about my mom and I, you know, our energy connecting on Christmas Day that year. And she actually wrote me a story of her connection with her mom when her mom died. And I asked her, and she said she'd be honored for me to read it on her behalf. So,
oh, that's awesome. That's beautiful. And your mom tells me that she connects with you each and every day. And then she shows herself sticking her hand in your body and giving your heart a little tick, tick, something, something. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to say it like that. You're her little girl. I'm not supposed to say it that way. This is not her father. Because your father's always so jokey and fun and all those sorts of things. But this is a little more heartfelt from mommy to daughter. Yes, to my little girl, she says. Yes, and she grabs you and she takes your shoulders and she kisses you right here, right where your hairline meets your forehead. Right there. Yeah, and I'm supposed to say, I love you. When she does that. Yeah.
Like yesterday was quite an emotional day. It was kind of weird. Like it was sort of like a hangover from the Art of Departure or something. And having missed the, you know, before I touched base with Daniel and then with you, having missed that opportunity to say, you know, to acknowledge with all of us about mom's birthday, I felt like I'd really missed that. And that didn't feel good. And I was just quite emotional yesterday. I can imagine the heart squeeze, because I certainly feel that sometimes. It's like that feeling of, you know, how can I possibly feel as much love as I have, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? And when we start thinking about them, that heart squeezes all those old emotions and memories that start flooding back to that that become so overwhelming. On the night of the Art of Departure, she was here. And she kept showing me a big banner that kept saying, happy birthday, but I didn't know if I should be interrupting people. I thought, oh my gosh, that was me going, look what I can do. That's what that feels like. And yeah, there were hints to you, apparently.
Oh yeah.
Were there things that were said, there were hints to you that we weren't alone. And also, too, before I came on, I asked for your mom to come. And I actually saw your sister and your father separate and pull her through. Which is really funny because, you know, your mother doesn't tend to be as vocal as your dad and your sister are because she's demure, she says. Is that true?
I don't know. She was pretty out there. She was pretty bold, for sure. Yeah,
I can't imagine a mother of you being demure.
No. Yeah, it's funny. Some people who knew my mom early on, like if they hear me laugh, they say, oh, you laugh just like your mom.
Oh, yeah. You do a lot of things like her, she says. There are certain inflections of the way you say things, certain movements that you do. She says, I see myself in you all the time.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, yesterday, one of my new friends over there commented on my hands, that I have lovely hands. And I immediately said, well, those are my mom's hands.
Yes, that's what she says. Those are my mother's hands. And then she says, well, I'm not using them anymore. Are you as tall as her?
I'm taller. I remember the day I got taller than her. That was a turning point.
Yeah. Did she actually get mad at you?
Oh, it wasn't a pleasant time.
No. She makes it so that she's like here, like at the top of your chest.
4 inches. Good 4 inches.
Oh, wowzers McGowzers. Wow. It's like half your face. Yeah, because she brings up your height. And she brings up him, your dad, how you took good care of him. And now she's going to take good care of him. And she says, thank you, because he's a handful.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of glad that she has him again.
Yeah, it's nice for me, she says. Yeah. Yeah, she's holding court. She is the matriarch. She was there before your sister, wasn't she?
Yeah, just my sister died 8 months later.
Ah, okie dokie. Okay, she makes it seem like she has been there. She is the oldest. She is the most evolved. They all come here. She is still the matriarch. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Okie dokie. Is there something about her on the bench?
Oh, well, no. But I've been thinking about making a bigger plaque for the death plaque, that all it will need is my death date, and that it would include mom and Chris. And
okay,
death.
Born of and survived. And yeah, okay. Yeah, because she's showing me something like that where they're named on it. She loves the bench.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she thinks it's wonderful. Yeah, and you do not sit there alone when you sit there. In fact, you've created a bench for everyone. That's funny. She's actually even showing you walking over to your bench after death and going, I need to sit on my bench. And it's full of family members. Just all the way chalk through. Because they've been using this bench a long time.
3 years.
That's so funny. And by then, it'll be a lot more than that. She said, so she just wants you to know, you got to fight for your bench.
You're going to have to fight for it.
Yeah, it's like the couch in front of the TV back when we were kids. Remember, you didn't get up to, because what if someone takes your seat?
Oh, that is funny. So, okay, so this does come back, though. I mean, you know, I just keep hearing it doesn't matter to them, and I can't believe we never talked about it, but does she and the others, do they... And Ian, you know, little Ian, who's only referenced on the headstone, like,
yeah,
like, would they like me to do that? Make a bigger plaque and have them all noted, duly noted?
Okie dokie. She says it's a suggestion, but you do whatever feels right to you. Ah, really, Mom? Wow. No, that's okay. I'm fine. That's what that is. That's 100% that. Okie dokie. All right. Honoring where you're coming from. And knowing, she actually writes at the very bottom of it, I'm watching you read this. That's funny. I didn't even know what I was going to say until it came out. That is so funny.
That's actually really excellent. There has to be a parting shot. There has to be something on that death plaque. Oh my God. I'm watching you read this. I'm writing it down.
I think that's great, Mom. She thinks she's very proud of herself. That's really, really good. Yeah. Okay. It's the legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because it needs to be you. That's what she says. You're clever. You're a good writer. You bring light to the world. So it should be like that with you. And she applauds you for your lack of fear.
Oh.
And that's the way she's putting it. Now, okie dokie. Okay. Oh, that's neat. I love this. Okay. So did you celebrate her birthday?
Well, I thought of her, you know, after midnight when I was still awake as October 4th came around. Did I celebrate it? I don't know. I mean, I had the Art of Departure.
Yeah. Well, if she was here, you might have gone and gotten her a piece of cake and eaten some piece of cake and watched her favorite movie with her, possibly.
Possibly. That would have been fun.
That is the suggestion, actually. Oh.
That I have some cake.
You're going to get the cake. You have balloons, and the balloons might actually be just to show me the celebratory nature. It may or may not mean that you need to buy balloons. But, and what is her favorite cake? Is it, it's not tiramisu, right? Because boy, does that cake ever look like a, it's like layered that she keeps showing.
Yeah, that's a good question. What was her favorite cake? Oh dear. She knew what everybody else liked.
Yeah, I don't even know that she knew. She actually just told you to pick your favorite. What's your favorite cake?
Well, she used to make me like a ginger cake. I love gingerbread.
Okie dokie.
And she'd make it with brown sugar icing. So like a spice ginger cake with brown sugar icing.
What do you think? Spice ginger cake with brown sugar? It'll do. She says. And any old movie that she would have known about or liked. That's what she says. And you will know the right one. Whatever you pick will be the exact right movie. And honestly, the name of the movie she's giving me is not the movie. It can't possibly be the movie.
What?
I've never even seen this movie, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Why?
Exactly. That movie was referenced all the time when I was a kid, and that might be why. Because it might be from when we were kids that she would have been an adult. I can't imagine it, but I have to say everything that goes on in my head, just in case. So I don't know why, and it might not be that particular movie, but it might be that era, the 70s. Because that's the 70s, isn't it?
That was the main time of us growing up, and then growing apart as I left for the West. Well, something that I did do, on the weekend, I went to St. Mary's, where our ancestors are through her, and I found our great-great-grandfather's homestead that she and Dad had gone and found in 2004 and 2005 by phoning up somebody on the notes that Dad had made.
That was wonderful. Yeah. Or did you get led there?
Well, I was led to phone that person before she left the house, and she was able to tell me the actual address outside in the country, how to get there, and that their property backs onto it, and it hasn't been lived in like a long time, like well over 20 years. Like, it's in pretty rough shape compared to the picture that Dad had in the file.
The front door is like hanging off the hinges.
Yeah. Yeah, windows are falling out. I mean, it's in rough shape, but what a beautiful property, tree line going into it, and beautiful sunny day, got so many cool photos. And that was really huge. That was huge because I went 3 years ago, and that's when I noticed that there was a typo on one of the names on the gravestone.
Oh, that's right. Always the editor.
Always the editor, yeah.
That was
your
dad that said that one.
Yes.
Claiming having helped you find the place. Also claiming she was with you a lot on her birthday. A lot. Yeah. And it's funny too, because when she talked about you having a party, she showed when my birthday comes around, my kids, I let them do whatever they want for me. And then I have my birthday after. after that.
Right.
Because, you know, it's the how they want to give me my birthday. That's fine. That's wonderful. And that's what I'll do. So that's what your mom shows with you. You can't do it incorrectly, she says.
Oh, well, that's great. I mean, I definitely was aware of her all day. It was a big day. And I thanked her because I got a call from the hopefully my new woman doctor's office came through on her birthday. And I was very aware of it being her birthday when that call came in.
She's doing the thing of pride, but I don't know if she orchestrated that, but she's still going to take pride in it.
Well, and when you said layers, like you were thinking layers of a cake, but you see, on Fridays, it's really hard for me not to go through the drive-in at the ice cream shop, because Fridays were the day that she and I would have our alone time together, because she would take me to ballet, drop me off, and then she would pick me up and we'd go out for a treat. So
day, that's funny. I wish I'd said it before you said it, Taylor.
So I like layers of ice cream on my cone.
Yeah, she actually even says she used you to get treats for herself. Oh, Lynn wanted me to buy it. She said, use me in the same way. She also, okay, there's something about sparkles. Or you know those poof things where you go, psh, and the things... You're not going to set one of those off in your apartment. I can't imagine you would want to.
What about bubbles? Like the bubble, I have bubble wands everywhere.
But aren't those, she showed me the bubble wands, but she picked something else because the bubble wands are for you, for your time. She actually shows you writing in marker, Lynn's wand, on one of them. So one of them is the Lynn wand.
There's a whole bunch of smaller wands, and there's one long one.
Oh, okay. I saw the big long one. So, yeah. She doesn't want you to mess with a whole bunch of little wands. Yeah, it's the main wand.
The main wand.
Yes, and she just waggled her finger at me. It's not a witch's wand. I have wands.
I have wands.
I do. Okie dokie. Do you work late into the night? Work too hard sometimes? Okay. Yeah. You need to put yourself to bed at a certain time. You even hear a voice in your head saying, Lynn, go to bed.
Lynn, oh, yeah. And sometimes I'm really good at it. I just shut everything down. It's like shut, 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 done. And other times is it, just one more thing, you know?
She says most times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to be true. Well, but, you know, it was always 10 or 10:30 with her. It was always, it's the hours before midnight. So, you know, I'd always be aiming for 10.
Yes. And were you like that as a kid too? Did she have to keep on coming into your room because you were flashlighting it underneath covers, reading a book or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't always know what's good for you.
No.
But your mom always does. She says, look to me. You know, people say, what would Jesus do? You have to say, what would mom do? Was your mom not really adventurous?
Oh, she was pretty adventurous, but then she had a bunch of kids and sort of had to stay closer to home for a while.
Okay, because your dad, if she does that, she's not going to do anything. That's what he said to your mom. So he's just got to get his words in edgewise a little bit. Yes.
Yeah. My sister showed up in my dream last night.
Sure, I'm trying to keep at bay.
I know. But she was sort of peeking over something. She was being feisty.
Yeah. Yeah. She was probably telling you too. I'm going to be there when you're talking to mom because I can be. Because she's my gosh. Is Chris older? No.
She's forever young. No.
Forever young. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, because she said she was my mummy first, but that was a lie. Nope, she was not your mummy first. She was your mummy last, actually. Was she not last?
Yeah, she was the youngest, yeah. And she had mom in a different way because the rest of us were, you know, in school when she was then at home. She had mummy later to herself. Yeah.
Yeah. Your mom says squeaky wheel gets the grease. So she may have been the most demanding upon mommy as well.
Well, she kept mommy close to home the longest.
Yes, and she she kept mommy worried all the time.
All the time. She
was not level-headed like you.
Well, she was mommy worried about me too, but more about my sister.
A different way, yes. Yeah. Yeah, and now your mom knows things that she should have been worried about. Things that you've written about, things that have happened that she didn't know about, she says, now she knows about because she's able to go back. And my goodness, you are going to get such a spanking when you get over there.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to include this part.
No, I don't know that you should either, but yeah, she's got a hold of your elbow. Oh. You're getting it. But only because you were too trusting, she says. Too open and willing to receive. That's how she puts it. That's how she wants to put it.
A lot of things I would change, if that helps anything.
She says, no. All those things made you you. But she reserves the right. She reserves the right.
Oh, boy.
I'm gonna tell you she loves you. So she flat out says, I love you, my Lynn. Okie dokie. Okay, you don't need to do anything for me. I would rather you do things for you in my name. Say, my mom would want me to do this. My mom would want me to do that. This is what my mom wants me to do. And then she looks at her watch and taps it. And it's like 10:01.
Don't go to bed.
You have to go brush your teeth, wash your face, and you should be in bed under the covers with a book by 10:15. And then she goes, Lynn, I'm watching you. She does the thing where they hold up their elbow when they're giving crap, like they give crap so much they need to hold up their own elbow. Yeah. That's funny. I actually hope that at 10:01 you hear in your head, do it.
That is so funny that you made that sound, because I've been doing that. That just like and I haven't known why, but every now and then I just get so excited and I do that sound and it's like, what is that?
That's funny. It's like the third time your mom has made that sound in my head. And I hear that sound a lot. I always know it's them. Yeah. Think of it as the vibration barrier is being actually permeated, and it creates a slight sound wave that sounds like it's hair. That's how they want you to think of it. So just know one of them is coming.
Thank you for that.
Yes, it's very on the nose. You're right. Ah, that's funny, because that's what people on the other side do. When they want me to know the answer is yes, they touch their nose.
And I never touched my nose like I just did. That's very unusual.
I only have ever seen you touch your nose like that. That is so funny.
Thanks for that, everybody. Let me tell you this story. Since it was my mom's birthday for the Art of Departure this week. And again, I love you, mommy, and I'm so sorry to miss the opportunity. But I understand that Bobby was sensitive to not wanting to get into major reading or...
want to make it all about me.
Yeah, I think it was great. Your contributions as ever, just lovely to have your dimension there. Okay, so I wanted to just briefly tell you about this story of what happened with my mom in Christmas of 2014. I'd been talking to her on the phone. She had a woman who had a service, but she was also a friend of the family in the town where they lived for many years. And she'd been visiting mom before she went into care. And she was in care for like 8 years before she died. Like, that's just so long. Oh my God. It just seemed to go on forever. And anyway, what happened was I was getting ready to go on the train on Christmas Day. in the afternoon was when the train left from Ottawa. And I think I was thinking I would stay over at my friend's in Toronto and then go on the next morning to be there. And so I was just doing stuff around my beautiful little apartment. And all of a sudden I sat down around 10 in the morning, and I sat down on my bed. The sun was streaming in, and I said out loud, nobody was there, but I said out loud, "Oh, I'm just feeling so much love right now." Like, it was this incredible feeling. It just washed over me, and I just had to acknowledge it, you know? So I went on with the day. I think, you know, I probably made some calls. I had talked to Mom. Funny, I didn't phone to see if I could have somebody hold the phone up to her. I had talked to her visitor, and she would hold the phone up to her and say, "Oh, we're getting some raised eyebrows on what you just said there, Lynn." Like, she gave me sort of real-time feedback. It worked well. It was great. So she knew everybody was coming for Boxing Day. And of course, she wouldn't want to make people make an extra trip, right? Because it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was just heading out the door. I was just locking the door as my friend arrived to take me to the train station. And my dad phoned, and I answered the cell phone, and he wanted to let me know that Mom had taken a turn for the worse, and they'd put her on oxygen. And I said, "Well, you know, I was so glad to know." And I said, "You know, I'm just going to come straight through. So I'll let you know when I get into town. I'll probably just stay in her room." Yeah. So when I got there, I got set up to just sleep in the big chair in her room. And one of the nurses came in, and I'd made a CD for Mom like years before when I lived on the West Coast. Like, I would record things and then make a CD for her. One of the nurses came in, and I hadn't met her before, and she was very enamored with my mom, and she had been there in the morning. So she might not have even been on shift. She might have been back for some reason. It was later at night, though. I'm not quite sure now. Anyway, she and another nurse had been in my mom's room that morning, Christmas morning. And I think it was just when they got her set up on the oxygen, when they assessed that she needed that. And they put on the CD for me. And suddenly my voice filled the room saying, "Hi, Mom. I have some stories I'm going to tell you today." And they were about, you know, the horse and the goat who lived near me, and the horses and the cows. You know, I had sounds of the cows and everything in the background. It was really great recordings. Mm-hmm. So my voice just filled the room, and Mom opened her eyes, and she was looking around, and the two nurses were just quite moved. It just was so, it was like I was right there. And so they just stepped out of the room for a minute to have a little cry. And then I said, "Well, what time was that?" And she said, "Well, it was right around 10 o'clock. And then I told her what had happened for me. And then we were all very amazed by that.
Oh my gosh. And she even shows it, because I always get the timeline when it comes to when they're leaving and the little bit before. I swear they can come back and do other things. They can have more presence of mind. I actually think she was connecting with you at that moment. You could feel her, because even though she hadn't completely left her body, she knew where you were. I actually think she looked for you in the room too when she heard your voice. That's why she opened her eyes. And then even though she couldn't see you, she knew you were there. When did she actually leave after that? Was it 2 days?
Yeah, it was 2 days, because that was Christmas, and she died around 9 in the evening on the 27th. And so, you know, we all gathered on the Boxing Day. We all, you know, took turns coming over to see her from Dad's apartment. And it was weird because she went off the oxygen at some point, and she kept being there. And it was kind of like, well, what else wants to happen? And then we realized this visitor for 10 years, twice a week, mm-hmm. had been out of town, and we hadn't phoned her to let her know that this was getting close. And so she was able to come over, and they had this great connection. And Mom hadn't been able to talk very much for a while, but she was definitely aware, you know, of what was going on. So yeah, after they had their visit, and the thing is, her longtime friend who she traveled to England with when they were 21, and Mom had her birthday on the ship, as the story goes, that friend I'd been helping in Ottawa after her husband died. I'd been helping her. And she had come to Toronto to visit with her son's family on the arrangement that I would travel back with her on the train on the Sunday, like on the 28th. And so I was, every few hours, I would phone her son and say, Mom's still here, but I really am committed to traveling back with your mom on the train. So there was a little bit of tension going on, you know, but Mom, she thoughtfully wrapped things up the night before so that I was free to go. Now, Dad was not thrilled about that. My sister stayed on, but I said, well, you can do whatever needs to be done. Like, you don't need me here right now, and I need to go back.
Yeah.
And I was back shortly. I mean, I helped to organize things for the memorial. I mean, I was back soon enough.
Oh. You made me yawn so much.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Holy. Well, I yawn when I do this because of the lack of oxygen to my brain. But man, oh man. Okay, I got to ask, was there actually music being played around her bed?
Yeah, my brother plays the flute. So he may have played a bit, and I think we may have had some music on.
Yeah, there's something about music. She can hear music. Like, she actually thinks there's like a band there actually playing guitar and having a great old time. I'm like, I don't think that's it, but okay. So she shows me that. She also shows, it's just a warm, it's like a party. Everybody just there cheering her on.
Oh yeah, and it was so amazing. This was so funny. Because they had that oxygen bed, so it makes all that noise. But that was perfect, because then when it was my turn to sit up beside her, nobody could hear me whisper in her ear, Mom, you're almost free as the breeze. You're almost ready to go. So, and then when she died, one of my brothers and my sister and our dad, the four of us were there. We'd been there for a while. And so after she died, I thought, oh, we can unplug this loud oxygen mattress thing. And so we did. And then she sunk down. So I thought, oh, so I plugged it in again. So I plugged it in again and she rose up.
Rose back up.
It was so funny.
Was it? Because that might actually be the sound. You know that sound when you're playing guitar where someone like wraps their knuckles on and goes ka-dunk, 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 almost uses the guitar like a drum?
Yeah.
Could that be the oxygen thing sound?
Well, there were two things. There was the oxygen, but there was also the inflatable mattress, right, that she had going. So that was a different sound.
Ba-dunk-gunk, ba-dunk-gunk.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Because it's sort of, yeah, it's pumping. Yeah, right.
In her head, thought it was somebody going on the guitar. That's how she's showing it to me so I know what that sound is. And right. All of that so that you know she was aware. She knew everything that was going on and she can actually tell you that some sort of sense. Yeah.
Yep.
That's neat. Absolutely neat. She just made a joke. Wasn't for me. I was dying. That's what she just said.
Yeah, but she was able to finally leave. I mean, that was no fun for her. She was
long suffering.
That was a tough stretch. Oh, yeah. I told her, though, I would tell her sometimes, you know, this is not going to go on forever. And you're going to look back on this and be amazed at what you went through.
Yeah, she says, didn't feel a thing. She puts it. They never sent her on the suffering. They sent her on the other sorts of stuff. Those physical things are never a center. So, yeah.
Right. Well, that's handy. Thank you so much for this.
No problem.
Do you have a few more minutes for me to share Teresa's account?
Yeah, sure. Please.
Teresa, here we go. Okay. I'd put that story that I told you about me feeling Mom and Mom looking, you know, connecting with me on that Christmas morning. Teresa said, thank you for sharing your story. It made me smile in awe to imagine that strong feeling of love and energy you felt from your mom in spite of the physical distance. What a strong connection. This story isn't exactly a story about energy, but a powerful testament to the control we can have over our passing. Teresa writes, I was 2 hours from Shanghai by train when I learned that my mom, who was in Florida, had 3 days to live due to a complication with dialysis. It was 10 p.m. in Shanghai, Mom couldn't speak, but the hospice nurse held the phone for her. And I told her I would get there as fast as I could. And if she couldn't wait, it was okay. I told her I loved her and knew that she loved me. The next train for Shanghai left in the morning, and I was able to get there, buy a ticket, and arrived in Tampa at 5 p.m. The travel took 24 hours. I went straight to the hospice facility and spent the night with Mom. She stirred at one point in the middle of the night, and while I had been talking to her, I said a bit more loudly, "I love you." By some miracle, she was able to strongly say, "I love you." In the morning, my dad, brother, and niece came back, and Mom stayed with us until 5 p.m. My brother was going to leave for a few minutes. Mom heard that, and before my brother left, the hospice nurse said it's time. I know that Mom waited for me to arrive and wanted to stay as long as possible while we were all together before departing. I cherish those last 12 hours I had by her side. I know that some people choose to depart when they are alone, and that is what they need. I am grateful that my mom wanted us with her. That was 15 years ago. And October 4th was Teresa's birthday, and a day that I miss her deeply. So thank you for letting me share this with you.
That is awesome. What a great story. And she's right. Most people wait till everyone leaves the room and they die with a stranger next to them on purpose too.
Maybe it's just such a vulnerable time.
They always show me it's because it's so gross. It's because of all the fluids and stuff, and a lot of their families can't take it. But I think her family could. She wanted them all actually together for her to pass. That's awesome. That's a great story.
Yeah, I was glad she was open to me sharing it.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Just briefly here, you were saying that you thought maybe a revisit to the summer room, or would we even call it that, or November readings maybe? I don't know, like maybe just a one-off, you know, an hour and a half or something, doing short readings with people just who shows up?
Yeah sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I do it every second Sunday, so.
Right, so why not come to Living on Purpose?
Yeah, why not do it on Living on Purpose?
Yeah, and I mean, what's cool is that differently than the summer room, people have been meeting you through the Art of Departure. So What about Sunday the 19th?
Sure, let's do that.
Do you want to call it November readings?
I always call it connections with the other side, but we don't have to use the word connections in there. We can do November readings.
Alrighty then. Well, that's exciting.
That is exciting. And meant to be. Kismet, let's say. That's what I'm being told, at least.
Oh my God. Well, my dear, you have a reading coming up, and we'll carry on in greatness for the next opportunity.
All right, young lady.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Lynn.
Okay, bye.
Bye.